Day. Journée mondiale de la radio.
世界无线电日。
Día Mundial de la Radio.
World Radio Day.
The children are getting their noonday cocoa, furnished by the United Nations Children's Fund. As they line up, you ask one brutal question.
What would happen if the food stopped?
They would starve more than they do today.
The voice of Edward R. Murrow, who many still regard as the greatest and most influential radio reporter ever. In 1948, he lent that famous baritone to UN Radio here in New York to tell the story of Europe's post-war child refugees. I'm Victor Evans Harvey, and for this edition of our UN News Podcast Classic, and in honor of World Radio Day, a full 70 years later, we're bringing you that audio documentary, pretty much in full.It's called Between the Dark and the Daylight. It draws upon multiple interviews with children from across the war-ravaged continent. It's hard to hear their voices and stories of tragedy and loss and not think of the children of Syria, Yemen, and northern Iraq today. Ed Murrow became the voice of wartime Europe for audiences across the U.S. with his famous catchphrase that began each measured dispatch from 1939 onwards. This is London.After setting the standard for all to follow in wartime radio reporting, he did the same in television journalism during the 1950s with the news documentary series See It Now. As President Lyndon Johnson said at the time of his death in 1965, Murrow dedicated his life as a newsman and as a public official to the unrelenting search for truth. In the UN documentary you're about to hear, the children's stories are what matters most, but the power of Murrow's writing for radio brought the full tragedy of war into the living rooms of the post-war world.
What does he want most in life?
A simple question, but the little girl puzzles over it. And while she puzzles, you look at her. Nice long pigtails, sort of tawny blonde, color of dark honey. Green blue eyes, typical turned-up nose, chubby cheeks. And she's got the way of smiling that girls have. They put their underlip below their teeth and...half swallow the smile. And what's the one thing she wants more than anything else in the world? The answer is the one you knew you'd get sooner or later. It's an answer to which there is no answer. What does she want more than anything else in the world?
I want to have my father and mother.
There is nothing more to ask. There is nothing more you can say.
More now from Edward R. Murrow as we mark the enduring power of radio this World Radio Day.
The Columbia Broadcasting System, in cooperation with the Radio Division of the United Nations, presents Between the Dark and the Daylight, a report on the children of Europe for American Overseas Aid, United Nations Appeal for Children, and the International Children's Emergency Fund. The children whose voices you will hear are real. They were all interviewed and recorded in Europe by Alan Sloan. The narrator is Edward R. Murrow.
Your report on the children begins in Italy, in Rome.Where the children sing. Bella Roma, they sing. And Rome is beautiful, even to orphans. But these orphans are like no kids you've ever seen before. An American girl who helps care for them describes some of them.
Well, Vittorio's sitting over here on the bench, cocking his head this way. He can't see anything, but he knows something's going on. And little Juliana has no legs. She's walking around on wooden stumps, watching. And little Christina, she's just gotten out of the hospital. She's here with her crutch and one leg gone almost to the knee.
There are 24 of them. Among them, they do not have the usual number of eyes, legs, arms, or parents. The American girl has one special child with his own special problem.
Italo Grande has both arms gone to the elbow, and he's totally blind with flak marks on his face. Italo will never learn Braille, as all the children here are being taught to, but one day we came across him trying to learn with his nose pressed to the Braille.
You see him go over into a corner and try to read Braille with the tip of his nose. Will he ever learn? Could you? Where the children have mothers, the Children's Fund...gives them one hot meal a day, spaghetti, bread, milk. At a feeding center in a huge hall near the Colosseum, you talk to a mother. You ask her what she needs most.
What do we need? Food for the babies. Milk. And chocolate. And a dress. We need very much dresses for the baby. We have not enough.
Suddenly she stops.
And very much embarrassed. Excuse me.
She is embarrassed because she has had to beg. But the Children's Fund doctor, who has brought you here, is not ashamed to beg for help. Remember, he says, that it is not the children's fault that they are hungry. You go on to another country. You fly south across the Aegean to Greece. And in Athens, in the very shadow of the Acropolis, you talk to a woman who sings no lullaby. When you have heard her story, you understand why. Her name?
Calliope Petropoulos.
Calliope, the name of one of the muses. You have come to talk about her child, so you ask where it is.
He had died today 15 days.
It died 15 days ago. You ask why?
It had nothing to eat, so it died.
It had nothing to eat, so it died. It's as simple as that. And what would Calliope ask an American mother?
I would ask her, with what are you feeding your child that it looks so fat, so nice?
She asks, not with envy, only wonder. And now on the journey north to Czechoslovakia, you remember a fragment of verse you learned as a child. Between the dark and the daylight, when the night is beginning to lower, comes a pause in the day's occupation that is known as the children's hour. In Czechoslovakia, the children sing, too. Even in a Bratislava hospital ward, you ask the doctor,
what is this little girl's name?
Gertruda Stefkova.
Gertruda Stefkova. You ask the doctor, how old is she?
She will be 9 years. What's wrong with this little girl? Does she know what she has? She doesn't know what she has. Does she know she's sick?
Hello.
She knows she's sick. As a physician, can you describe her? And you look at her in her crib here. It's a girl. She's thin and pale. She has blue hollowed eyes. Thin, pale, long fingers. Her face is a little... She has roses on the face.
These roses on the face that you've just described are...
That's a feverish sign of tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis. Will Gertrude ever get better?
Well, maybe she can be cured. But when she will return to the home and she will have the same nourishment she had up to now, then I don't see a good future for the child.
In other words, you work as hard as you can to cure her, knowing that when she goes home, the same thing will start all over again.
That is probable.
That is probable. Everywhere the children sing. This time, in a smoky steel town in the north of Czechoslovakia called Kladno, nearest neighbor to a village whose name comes up at once. The name of the village? Lidice. You remember Lidice. You talk with a young English girl married to a Czech. When the notorious Heydrich was assassinated, the Nazis claimed her husband had done it.
Yes, they claimed that my husband was seen in Lidice soon after the assassination, and so his mother and father and everyone were taken away, and the majority of them were shot.
That was Lidice. By chance now, you have found a mother of Lidice. And when you're talking to a woman of Lidice, the words mother and widow are synonymous. In her kitchen, Mrs. Horakova tells you about her neighbor's little boy, Václav.
He was used by the Germans as a guinea pig for experimenting their various new injections and so forth. Just kept as we would a guinea pig, then he was kept in the hospital, especially for experimenting.
Did Václav know what was happening to him?
The child was used to it. He was used to it all his life. He didn't expect anything else from life.
He was used to it. Now, I want to ask his mother what may appear to her to be a foolish question. Was she glad to see him after 5 years in a concentration camp?
Velice šťastná, neboť byl celý podobný svému mužovi.
I was very glad because he looked like my husband very much. He looked like my husband, but he was very thin.
He is still very thin. And so you ask, does he get enough to eat?
You know, there's not much to eat because the rations are just not too big, you know. The rations are not so bad, but of course he eats like a lion, and I have not enough to give him.
And now the old question again. In Italy, in Greece, now Czechoslovakia. What do they want? What do their children need?
It would be fruit. Chocolate. And my little Venushek would like best some chocolate. There's no chocolate to be had here. That's what he's missing most.
Chocolate.
It's a thing, it's a luxury. They haven't had it for so long, and so the ideal actually is chocolate. That is the good old times again.
But she is a poor mother, and even in the old days she did not have too much. So you turn back to Mrs. Horakova, the English girl.
Now, you would call yourself a reasonably well-to-do family here in Czechoslovakia, wouldn't you? And yet, you told me that your own little boy is undernourished. Why is that?
Vitamins are lacking here in his food, and because of that, he's suffering from short-sightedness, which will probably have now for the rest of his life.
And speaking of vitamins, or vitamins...
Children here really don't know the way to eat an orange if they get it. We've had the first ration this Christmas in 18 months.
And so you ask for the daily diet of a Czech child. And surprisingly, she goes off on a tangent.
It's difficult to describe, really. You see, the thing we call coffee here isn't coffee at all. It's a mixture of chicory and some such things.
Why do you keep talking about coffee? Children are supposed to drink milk, aren't they?
Yes, but you see, we need coffee. We have it on our minds all the time, and we give them this mixture because the milk isn't here for them.
The milk just isn't here. Why? There has been a terrible drought, and so...
All the cattle are being slaughtered now because there's nothing more to feed them with until the spring.
There is nothing more to feed the cows, so they kill them. And because they're killing the cows, there is no milk for the children. It is a particularly vicious cycle. Now it is another country in another language. You're in a girls' school in a working-class district of Vienna. There are 34 girls in this class. 24 have no fathers. These children are hungry. So you ask the teacher, how do they behave?
They fall asleep all over and over again. They don't sleep, really, but they just sink into their chairs, and they are so exhausted that they are listless.
And the teacher herself?
I, too, am very tired very often. The hungry teacher cannot do the work as he should do it.
Meanwhile, the children are getting their noonday cocoa, furnished by the United Nations Children's Fund. As they line up, you ask one brutal question.
What would happen if the food stopped?
They would starve more than they do today.
The darkness deepens as you go to another country. The place it all began, Germany. But the song is not German. Neither are the children singing. There are some of those the Nazis stole and whom the International Refugee Organization of the United Nations has found, fed, and sheltered. Children from everywhere. Here before you, shivering in the unheated room, is a little Estonian girl.
What's your name?
Birit Neme Guru.
Where do you come from?
Estonia.
How old are you?
11.
What does she like to do?
I like to write.
To write what?
Fairy tales I like to write.
Fairy tales.
Now, where is her mother?
Kusansuema. My mother is dead.
Perrette replies to one more question. The answer may be part of a fairy tale she is dreaming.
She wants to go to America.
And so you do not have to ask what she wants most of all. So many children. You spot a jaunty little fellow.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Nicholas Selmy.
Where do you come from, Nick?
I come from 94th Squadron.
You come from the 94th Squadron? What country is that?
Oh. Well, you mean where I come from home?
Yeah.
Well, I come from the Ukraine.
And how'd you end up with the 94th Squadron?
Well, when the war started with the Russians on Germans, my father was getting killed in the wartime. And then after that, my mother had an accident with a German truck. Germans took me away. on a train and took me to Germany. And then I was working on a little German stone factory. They was making some kind of a stones.
The phrase is slave labor.
After that, when American soldier come, I was going to the 90th Division like a company mascot in 358 Infantry Regiment.
A company mascot, picked up by the GIs, left behind when they went home.
By the way, how old are you, Nick?
I'm 14.
14?
A 14-year-old boy ought to have a fair idea of the meaning of things, so...
Nick, let me ask you, what do you think about war?
Well, war killed my father and mother, and, bombed my home. I ain't got no more home, no family, nobody.
Nick picked up his English from the GIs. How was Army life?
That's the only life I really know. If I wouldn't be with a soldier, I wouldn't have no clothes, no nothing yet.
Wouldn't have had anything, huh?
Right.
What have you got now, Nick?
Well...
It wasn't a fair question. Come to think of it, maybe the next ones weren't either.
Nick, what does tomorrow mean?
Tomorrow? That's the next day... What's gonna come?
What's happiness?
Happiness? Well, happiness is that you're happy, you got everything what you want, and you got your life, you're happy. It means that you got your home and everything.
His home and everything. A Glasterhausen, a DP camp for children. The official term for them is unaccompanied children. Children from all over Europe. Romanian, Dutch, Italian, French, Belgian, Yugoslav, Norwegian, Latvian, Estonian, Lithuanian, Russian, Ukrainian, Polish, Czech, Hungarian, Greek, Bulgarian, and nationality unknown. The Nazis must have loved the children. They stole so many of them, including these two Jewish girls. One has a shawl over her head, freckles on her nose, twinkle in her eyes, and a very frightened smile playing on her lips. And she has a little army jacket on with U.S. brass button. Her sister, a little older, has her hair done up in a very complicated and unusual knot on her head. The same very doubting, frightened smile on her face.
Now, what's your name?
Sarah Feigenbaum.
Sarah Feigenbaum. And what's your name?
Feigenbaum Dora.
Dora Feigenbaum. And how old are you, Sarah?
Just
10.
10. She looks about 7. And how old are you, Dora?
14.
She looks much older.
It has been like that all over Europe. The young ones are small for their age, and the older ones are old for theirs. You ask Dora, the elder sister.
Are you in good health?
I feel that I am quite well, but they say to me that I have something in the lungs.
Something in the lungs. And how about the little girl? How's her health?
Well.
Well, good.
You turn to the American director of this international refugee organization settlement and ask, what's the problem with Sarah and Dora?
The older child had had tuberculosis. Because of that, there is no possibility that she would be accepted for immigration to Canada.
And what about the little one? She's okay, isn't she?
The little girl would probably pass the physical examination, and there would be no difficulty with her resettlement in Canada. But it is a serious question of whether one should separate two children who are as close as these and who have no one else in the world.
The little one is all the big one has, and the big one is all the little one has. So you ask the little one if she wants to go. She nods yes, but adds,
yes,
but alone, I don't want.
You turn back to the bigger one.
Well, Dora, it's a better life your sister is going to. Do you want her to stay with you here, or do you want her to go away?
Yes, sister,
I do not want to be separated from my sister.
I see. Why? Why not?
If she's gone to Canada and I have to stay here, then we are
separated forever because they are two different worlds. Dora came to me several days ago and asked that I send the younger sister to Canada. And we decided at that time she would think about it and we would talk about it later.
Apparently she's changed her mind.
Yes, apparently she has.
You turn to another child, a chunky, brown-haired boy who has been very quiet all this while.
What's your name?
Mihaisko.
Slobetsky, Meyer.
Meyer Slobetsky. And where are you from, Meyer?
From Poland.
From Poland. Meyer, will you tell me your story?
We're in Germany, so he speaks German.
1939 hat der Krieg ausgebrochen. Bin ich 1941 in Göttingen gekommen.
1939, the war started, and I was brought to Ghetto 1941.
Where was that?
Kelce.
Kelce. And then?
Dann nach Treblinka.
Treblinka, a concentration camp. And then?
1945 nach Auschwitz.
Auschwitz, another concentration camp, the worst of them all. And then?
Berlin, Oranienburg.
Oranienburg. Another camp. And then?
Belsen.
Still another. And after that?
We got free in April 1945.
That was 3 years ago. He is still in a camp. Where is his family? His mother.
His mother had me erschossen in Kelce. He had built a group out to me. His mother had
me. Translation. They shot my mother in Kelce. I buried her myself. His father?
Verbrannt.
Burned. His brother?
Dann hat seinem Bruder aufgehauen, gekillt.
He had to hang up his own brother.
How did that happen, that he had to hang his own brother?
Amara is finding it very difficult to explain. But the story as we know it, and as he has told me, is that there were 1,503 men left in the ghetto. The Germans had given an order for 1,500 men for a work battalion. There were three left over, and these three men were taken out and gallows were erected to hang them. Among the three men was Meyer's older brother, who was 2 years older, who was to be hanged. And Meyer went out and asked the Germans that he be hanged instead of his brother. He said that he did not want to live. And he begged the Germans to hang him. The Germans refused to hang Meyer, but they forced him to hang his brother, because he had asked to be hanged himself.
What day was that?
It was the same day that he had found his mother and had buried her.
I see. Meyer, I'm going to give you the microphone and ask you to say anything you want. Would you mention what is ours? Would you what is ours?
For the people, I want to work. As for myself, I want freedom. Anything else? And the way to Canada, as quickly as possible. You have talked to the children of Europe here at Glasterhausen, and they have told you their stories. Many, many questions, and many, many answers.
How is this little girl singing? What's her name?
Linda Mistrebaite.
Linda?
From Lithuanian.
I'm a Lithuanian girl.
Now, how old is she?
15.
15. She's very small for 15. She has a nickname, the Baroness. And she is a Baroness, too. Her father was an earl.
And where is her father now?
He's sick. He's dead.
And where is her mother?
Dead also.
And what does she want most in life?
A simple question, but the little girl puzzles over it. And while she puzzles, you look at her. Nice long pigtails, sort of tawny blonde, color of dark honey. Green blue eyes, typical turned up nose, chubby cheeks. And she's got the way of smiling that girls have. They put their underlip below their teeth and half swallow the smile. And what's the one thing she wants more than anything else in the world? The answer is the one you knew you'd get sooner or later. It's an answer to which there is no answer. What does she want more than anything else in the world?
I want to have my father and mother.
There is nothing more to ask. There is nothing more you can say. You pack your recording gear and start for home. It's growing dark outside. You turn to say goodbye, and then they begin to sing. And when you hear what they're singing, in words most of them do not even understand, you unpack your gear and make one last recording. Give me a home, they sing, where the skies are not cloudy and gray. This is Ed Morrow again. You want to do something about all this, of course. When you hear voices that reflect so much hunger, so little hope. When you realize that in parts of Europe and Asia, the odds against the survival of babies are 50 to 1. Of course you want to do something. You ought to. And do it fast. And with the certainty that what you're doing will help. The way to help is through the United Nations Crusade for Children, through a generous donation. The world of tomorrow, remember, it's your world as well as theirs, needs healthy, clear-thinking citizens. A gift to the Crusade for Children is more than an act of simple humanity. It's an investment in the future of mankind itself.
Columbia Broadcasting System, in cooperation with the Radio Division of the United Nations, has brought you Between the Dark and the Daylight. Your narrator was Edward R. Murrow. Between the Dark and the Daylight was written by Alan Sloan, who also interviewed and recorded in Europe the voices of the children you heard on this broadcast.
This UN News podcast is only possible thanks to the unique audiovisual archive that we have here at the UN. You can find treasures from there online by going to unmultimedia.org/classics. Every week, our archivists are unearthing new and historical material from the vaults here at UN headquarters in New York. Thanks to them for making these podcasts possible. I'm Victor Evans Harvey. And to quote the famous sign-off phrase from the master of radio and television you've just been listening to, Ed Morrow, we will not walk in fear one of another. Good night and good luck.